Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from UR subscribers
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Coyotes now live in every part of New Hampshire, a remarkable expansion given that about 70 years ago there were no coyotes here. But how do Granite Staters feel about this? Few species elicit such strong opinions. Some describe coyotes as bloodthirsty and dangerous, while others call them remarkably adaptive and a vital part of our ecosystem. And these conflicting emotions about coyotes emerge when it comes to setting policy, as seen in the state's current debate over whether to restrict coyote hunting. Today in The Exchange, coyotes in our midst and how we respond. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests. Mark Ellingwood is here, Wildlife Division Chief at the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. And Mark, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Also with us, Patrick Tate, fur bearer biologist with New Hampshire Fish and Game. Pat, welcome back. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Chris Shadler, wild canid biologist and New Hampshire-Vermont representative for Project Coyote and co-founder of the New Hampshire Wildlife Coalition. And Chris, it's nice to meet you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Rick Vanderpoel, principal of Ecosystem Management Consultants. He's a wetlands and natural resources management expert working around New England. And Rick, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Nice to see you, Laura.
Well, all of you, we just have to start first with the pronouncer because people are going to ask us about this. So let's just go around the room if we could first. And Rick, I'll go to you first. Some people say coyote, including me. That's just what I heard growing up. Some people say coyote. What do you say?
Coyote.
You say coyote. Okay, Chris.
Both.
Both. Mm. Okay, fair enough. Pat?
My go-to is coyote.
Okay, Mark?
Likewise.
All right. So I'm on solid ground if I do say coyote, because that is the way I was brought up to say it. Chris, I wanted to start with you. What was your most recent interaction with a coyote or a coyote?
Well, if you mean face-to-face, it would have been back when I had my sheep farm, and I was attempting to use non-lethal measures to keep coyotes off of my sheep. And it was most gratifying for me to see them on the other side of the fence. So, you know, I had an opportunity to observe gray ones, white ones, tan ones, blackish ones, all different colors, watching me steadily, waiting for me to make a mistake in the way that I was managing my sheep. Fortunately for my sheep, I never made that mistake. So the coyotes learned around my farm to stay away from my sheep due to the management that I had at the farm, and we had a good relationship. They took care of the mice and the rats, and my sheep grew long and healthy.
Well, and that's really interesting. And I've read your descriptions, Chris, about how you use techniques that you call almost hazing. You sort of taught them in some tough ways to stay away from your sheep. What did you do?
Well, the problem was that the farm that we had purchased had a lot of coyote predation on sheep. So the coyotes had learned to eat sheep. And I had to retrain them, which would take a generation, which is about 3 to 4 years. So I didn't want to kill any or trap any. I managed my sheep intensively and kept them safe day and night. But if I saw coyotes anywhere near my fence, I would leap over the fence and run after them screaming and hollering. I looked insane. And, you know, used air horns. I used anything that I could to convince them that I was terrifying. And I also kept my sheep unavailable. So I think it was the combination of those two. And after about 4 years, they were not a problem.
Well, and coyotes have a reputation for being smart, right? I mean, we all saw Wile E. Coyote. Right. So it sounds like they were kind of smart. They picked up on what you were trying to teach them.
Listen, dead coyotes learn nothing. And they are a dog. The bottom line is they're a dog, and dogs learn rapidly. And oddly enough, the smaller the wild dog, the more adaptable that wild dog is. When you compare coyotes with wolves, for example. So these mesopredators on down, they're highly, highly adaptable. And given a chance to learn and to live, they'll take the living option.
Well, and there's so much about their biology that's so interesting. That adaptability, that resilience, the fact that they've managed to spread across the landscape here in New Hampshire. There's a huge story there. Rick, I want to bring you into this too. What are some of the myths about coyotes?
Well, probably one of the most common ones I hear is that they're cunning and bloodthirsty killers. And of course, yes, they're cunning, they're intelligent, as Chris indicated, but they're predators. And naturally, predators kill to survive. And they teach their young to do the same thing. And of course, they're an essential part of the ecosystem, having replaced our extirpated wolves and occupying that niche space almost as effectively. In fact, some claim even more so because of their adaptive ability to optimize their prey in the midst of human fragmentation.
So put that in more layperson terms, yeah. Rick. Optimize their prey in human fragmentation.
They have learned how to survive in, say, a neighborhood, a suburb, downtown Manchester, and you'll see coyotes everywhere, whereas wolves, as you know, are far more resistant to get into the middle of a development to hunt their prey base. So coyotes have learned this, and they're incredibly intelligent, and they're great sort of predators in that sense.
Why are predators important?
Well, predators keep prey species intact. Certainly one of the benefits that coyotes have demonstrated is their ability to control small mammals, all types of rodents, mice, and some of these, of course, are carrying pathogens that we tend to get affected by, like Lyme disease. And so coyotes are helping maintain a balance in that small prey base by eating them on a regular basis.
So that's how much do you think some of the fear around coyotes, Rick, is because people, you know, think of them as small wolves and people are afraid of wolves?
Yeah. Well, that's gonna be a hard one to turn around after centuries of our learning culturally. Learning to detest other predators, top predators like wolves. But coyotes are very different in that sense. I mean, yes, they are primary predators, but they're just one of several different predators that help sort of affect the balance of predator-prey populations in the ecosystem.
Chris, so, how biologically similar are coyotes and wolves?
Very. Coyotes out here, you know, have some wolf DNA in them, which makes them larger. And our coyotes tend to live on territories, which helps naturally balance their populations and keep their populations low if they're not exploited. Wolves are animals that occupy a niche of eating large animals, moose, caribou, elk, mule deer, that kind of thing. Coyotes tend to specialize on rodents, but because our coyotes are a little bit larger than the Western brand, you know, they can take fawn and they will take deer as well if the conditions are right.
Well, it's interesting. You say they're large. I saw one, actually, in the fall. I was up in Colebrook visiting some friends and just happened to look out the back window and boom, boom, there he or she was, and it was quite large. And I guess I'd always thought of coyotes as smaller, but this was big.
Yeah, the Western ones, little Wile E. Coyote, is 25 to 30 pounds, and our guys are anywhere from 35 to 65 pounds.
Yeah. So, this must have been a 65 pounder because
they look a lot bigger in the winter because of their fur.
I see. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the Exchange, we're learning about coyotes in New Hampshire and some of the issues that come up when we live side by side with them, because as we're hearing, coyotes are now present in all areas of the Granite State. Join us with your comments, questions, and your own personal interactions, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Pat, I want to turn to you. Do you guys at Fish and Game track the number of coyotes that we have here in New Hampshire? I'm just wondering what you're seeing on the landscape in terms of where they are and how much their numbers are growing.
We track our coyote population by what's called a capture per unit index, and that's the number of animals captured per 100 trap nights. We don't have a method to determine population levels or anything like that because of the cost associated with determining population levels. And most recently, I learned even when we do calculate population levels, they're highly contested from various realms of the public and a significant amount of money spent for a lot of controversy. So with that, we can track indexes of increasing, decreasing, or holding stable. Right now, our population's holding stable, and based on home range calculations, our number's somewhere likely around 4,500 animals.
Yeah, but just cautioning listeners that that's a guesstimate. We really don't know.
Correct.
Where are they? Rick said something like downtown Manchester. I'm just wondering, where are coyotes living these days?
We have eastern coyotes from border to border. I'm confident in saying every city in the state of New Hampshire has eastern coyotes in those city borders. So with that said, there's no doubt in my mind any town level has eastern coyotes.
How remarkable is that to have coyotes in, you know, here in Concord, for example?
They're a generalist species which takes advantage of any food resource that's seasonally abundant. They, as said earlier, are highly adaptive. So if humans are feeding animals outdoors or any other type of food sources, they will take advantage of what is abundant. It does not matter if it's wild abundant or people are leaving it out there. I've seen situations where both have occurred.
Really? So coyotes will, you know, knock off your trash can lid if you leave it on loosely?
So I haven't seen them knock off trash can
lids.
Sounds
more like raccoon behavior.
That's more like raccoon behavior, absolutely. But people who will feed animals outdoors, they have taken advantage of those food resources. Compost piles, they have been seen taking advantage of compost piles.
Oh, okay.
Unintentional feeding, fruit trees. People have seen them taking advantage of fruit trees. It all comes back to food. And they're doing what any living thing would do when it's hungry. If it finds food, it's going to eat it.
Mark, I want to bring you in, too. And I've been doing a lot of reading about how people feel about coyotes, their remarkable spread, the resilience of the population, the debate over whether we should limit hunting or not. And we'll definitely get into that. Why do you think, Mark, people seem to feel so strongly about coyotes, you know, either way?
I believe it's because coyotes in various circumstances threaten or compete with the interests of people. You know, we have a long history as a culture of having concerns about the presence of predators, and coyotes are slipped into that realm, viewed negatively by some, loved by others. The issues of coyote and coyote management are surrounded by issues of public ethics, values, science, and politics. And so that competing interest that comes together to decide and influence how we manage coyotes is a reflection of very diverse opinions within our public regarding their values.
How does that affect you at Fish and Game? Again, you're chief of the Wildlife Division. I mean, how do you even sort that out?
It's a challenge, to be honest with you, because our very detailed public hearing process affords people with very diverse interests to come together, exchange their views. The commission arbitrates the reception of those views and helps direct us. I think it's fair to say that the department at large, the Wildlife Division specifically recognize coyotes as an integral part of our ecology. And without trying to define why we think coyotes are valuable, they're simply valuable as an essential part of a functioning ecosystem. We accept that fact, try to stay out of the judgment game, and try to ensure that coyotes are here at levels that are consistent with public interests and our other wildlife management stewardship interests.
And that gets into some of the issues that we'll definitely talk about. Proposals to reduce the hunt a little bit, to put some restrictions on it. I definitely want to go to our listeners, though, all of you. Lots of people want to jump into our conversation. So please feel free to call 1-800-892-6477 or feel free to email exchange@nhpr.org. And from Bridgewater, John is calling. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. I'm a lifetime New Hampshire resident and hunter for generations. And we call them coy dogs in New Hampshire. We don't call them coyotes. We don't call them wolves. We call them coy dogs. And it's kind of a play on words because they are quite clever. They're coy dogs.
And as a hunter, how do you feel about coyote hunting in general? John, do you hunt them yourself?
I do, but I'm an older man now, and they take quite a lot. I live in central New Hampshire, and they do roam everywhere, but you have to really work for them. They're quite smart, and you have to move and bait them in. And I would hunt with them. My friends do, but I don't really like shooting them, even though I have no problem. I would shoot 10 a day. And it's not, they are God's creatures, and they eat. And I made your show, we talked about this before, you and me. A few years ago, you had this on, and we made, you made the greatest yearly things because we had the same discussion. It's not that they kill, it's how they kill. They kill the babies, deer, and they do kill mostly rodents, which is good. But the way they drag the fawns down, and they pin them. They're not really big enough to snap the necks. They drag them down, and then they will literally eat them alive.
So some issue with the way that coyotes hunt, John. If I could just ask you real quickly, how do you feel about this proposal to limit the coyote hunt somewhat while the females are raising pups?
Well, there's an overpopulation of them now, they say. There's way, they're everywhere in every town. There's no reason to limit the hunt. They are so adaptable and hard to hunt, they should keep it the same way it is, which is 24 hours, day and night, any day of the year.
Well, John,
and, it's also, to make it quicker, they do kill the big mature bucks, too. They'll fight the big bucks. And when they winter this time of year, the deer will all get together and yard up. The coy dogs, when the snow gets correct, they can run over the top of the snow. The deer cannot. So the coy dogs come in, and the big bucks will fight them. They can't take the bucks, but what they do is they'll rip at the Achilles tendons in the back of the big bucks and then run them down and suffer them and kill them horribly.
Well, John, I'm glad you called. You raised a lot of issues, and I know our guests are going to want to jump in on this as well. The way that coyotes hunt, the term coy dog, whether there is an overpopulation or not, that's a matter of discussion for sure. So, John, thank you very much for calling in. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Chris, what about this term coy dog?
Well, back in 1944, when coyotes first appeared in New Hampshire, it was a bigger coyote than the standard coyote out west. And they didn't know quite what to make of this animal that looked like a coyote, but it was bigger. Now, with the genetics work that is available to us, we understand what this animal is. It's a coyote invigorated with wolf DNA.
So more wolf than dog, Chris, would you say?
Pardon me? Oh,
more
yes.
More wolf than dog. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. But the interesting thing about coy dogs, all members of the dog family can interbreed. Wolves can interbreed with dogs, coyotes, and wolves, the whole batch of them. When wolves and coyotes interbreed, they mate, pair up, feed the young. When dogs and coyotes interbreed, the dog walks away saying, "Excellent day for me," and the female is left to raise the pups on her own.
So it's not as stable a family unit, so
not only that, but when coy dogs come into heat, they come into heat at a time of the year that is different than coyotes. So a coy dog population is virtually impossible in the wild. These are not coy dogs. I'm sorry to disagree with you, sir, but that's one of the myths. They're not coy dogs, and they can't be.
Well, Pat, one of the issues that John raises is an issue that others have raised as well. Just a general distaste with the way coyotes are said to hunt, you know, the way John describes it, you know, and I've heard others say this too. You know, it doesn't seem like a fair fight. They sort of, you know, pack up together. And I just wonder what you think about John's observations about how coyotes hunt.
Everything he has said has been witnessed on the landscape in New Hampshire. It becomes a question at the rate it's witnessed. There's no doubt a person can go online, especially with social media now, and find many pictures of what he experienced. My own experiences in the woods, by the time I see an animal that's been killed by an eastern coyote, it's been consumed to the point that I can't see exactly how it was killed. But one thing I wanted to point out is, as the caller stated, that hunting season was 24/7 in New Hampshire, meaning 24 hours a day, seven days a week. That's incorrect. I want to just clarify that. In New Hampshire, the night hunting season is January 1st through March 31st. Outside of the night hunting season, a person can hunt coyotes during the legal hunting hours, which are a half hour before sunrise, and then close a half hour after sunset.
And so between, just to make sure I got this 100% right, Pat, yeah. Between January and March, it is 24/7. And then from March to the end of December, it's just during the daytime, basically.
And New Hampshire has a trapping season as well, which for simplicity reasons, it's divided. But for simplicity reasons, call it November 1st to March 31st is the trapping season. So what I'm getting at, there's regulations out there, in my mind, helping balance out some of these concerns from the public.
We heard a concern from John, too. And again, I've heard this from other people, too. Mark, so I want to ask you, and maybe you too, Rick, that there's no reason to limit the hunt because, as John says, there's an overpopulation of coyotes. What is an overpopulation, and do we have one with coyotes?
I think overpopulation is sort of a subjective opinion based on the interests of the person who is offering it. In fact, my measure of overpopulation is, are coyotes having an adverse impact on our ability to manage other species? And in that case, I can tell you the deer population is doing very well in New Hampshire. We are meeting our population objectives. And so in that context, I'd say from a management perspective, we're content where we are. We like the balance. Coyotes are doing well. Our deer population is doing well. If we had evidence to indicate something to the opposite, then I think we would have to do some serious scientific exploring to understand and tease out some of those issues. But as it stands, it's really in the eye of the beholder.
So coyotes are not hurting the deer population, as some people fear.
Well, coyotes take deer. There's no question about it. And that's their obligation if they want to sustain themselves, particularly in the winter when there's that bottleneck. They take fawns. They take adult deer. There's no arguing that point. And in some states, it's a problem, given the goals of deer management. In our case, we're in pretty good shape, and so I'd say we're doing just fine.
Well, and from an ecosystem perspective, you don't want too many deer, right? Because then that creates other problems.
Absolutely. We don't want too many deer. Right now, we have a healthy, well-managed, measured population of deer.
Well, John, lots of thoughts that you put on the table. Thank you for calling in. We'll take a lot more of your calls and emails after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one? NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the expansion of coyotes in New Hampshire. Few species seem to elicit such strong opinions, And these conflicting views are playing a role in whether to put more limits on coyote hunting. Right now, there are very few restrictions, but that's been up for debate recently. Let's hear from you, your questions, comments, personal observations about these animals in our state. 1-800-892-6477. Email is great, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. We have four guests for the hour. Rick Vandepol is here, principal of Ecosystem Management Consultants, along with Chris Shadler, wild canid biologist and New Hampshire-Vermont representative for Project Coyote. Also, Patrick Tate, fur bearer biologist with New Hampshire Fish and Game, and Mark Ellingwood, wildlife division chief at New Hampshire Fish and Game. And all of you, lots of people want to jump into our conversation, and we'll go right back to you in just a moment. But just a little bit ago, we got a call, Rick, from John, who made a couple points about coyotes and saying that, you know, he didn't like the way that they hunt deer. He also felt like there was an overpopulation of coyotes in New Hampshire. And as an ecosystem guy, I wonder what you think.
Well, I think what Mark said was right on. It's sort of a subjective opinion about overpopulation. But let's face it, coyotes are predators, and they are limited by their food resources, just like all predators are. So if the food base is ample, then the coyote population will respond in kind. If it goes down, then they will also shrink their population. So it's a pretty natural cycle. Limiting the season, of course, would, in my opinion, allow for young coyotes during that critical pup rearing time period to learn from the adults and perhaps learn the appropriate behaviors in engaging with human food resources. And that's it's somewhat of a contestable point, but I think if you look at the resources that limit coyote family groups, having the adults be able to teach their young to use the existing network and not engage in so-called inappropriate behavior by raiding a garbage can or killing chickens in your pen would be helpful.
So you're saying coyote pups learn from their parents, and if you hunt the parents when they're very young, they will not learn appropriate wild animal behaviors. That's
one of the critical points. Of course, the other is that typically it's the alpha male or female that breed in a particular coyote pack, and if you pull one out by hunting, then you might disrupt the pack and encourage more breeding by non-alpha individuals in a particular pack, like a beta female or a beta male. And that could also increase a localized population by actually stimulating more breeding.
That's one of the counterintuitive parts about this that I've read, you and others, Chris as well, I've read, that when you kill adults, you might actually create more coyotes, which seems, again, counterintuitive, but you explained it well, Rick. Mark, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to mention, in addition to biological carrying capacity, do you have an overpopulation or not? There's that cultural component, the ability of our society to sustain a presence in ways that satisfies all interests. And in that context, I would remind everybody who's listening that from a complaint perspective, we receive very few. 3% of our annual complaints, something on the order of 50 complaints a year, many of which are driven by a lack of familiarity, if I would, fear, unwarranted generally. So in that context, I would say we're in pretty good shape.
That's interesting. And I want to let listeners know that Mark has a pie chart in front of him dividing up, what is it, calls, Mark, to Fish and Game, complaints about animals.
Yes.
And the biggest slice of the pie by far is what?
It is black bears,
black
as you'd
bears.
Expect.
Okay.
So I do want to mention that Wildlife Services, USDA Wildlife Services, actually compiles this information for the department and are a critical partner in our handling of all sorts of nuisance calls.
Well, speaking of calls, and when you call the exchange, you're not a nuisance. We want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Up next, all of you, is Francis and Keene. Hi, Francis. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning. Go ahead, Francis.
Oh, okay. My question was that, comment was, I do hear a lot of talk from hunters about coyotes being pests and the talk of management, and I'm always amazed at the fact that there is no discussion about how apex predators, which I do not consider a coyote one, I consider a wolf, but actually make the game animals bigger, stronger, and healthier, whereas the way people hunt, shooting for trophy animals, actually weakens the gene pool of the animals they supposedly are trying to help. And I was wondering why there's no talk of reintroducing the wolf as a way to control the coyote population.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much for calling, Francis. First of all, apex predator. Pat, what is that? And then I can see everybody wants to jump in on this. But what's an apex predator?
An apex predator is an animal that's on top of the food chain at the peak of the triangle, and it affects every animal underneath that. For that reason, I don't consider an eastern coyote an apex predator because it does not affect our moose population. It doesn't, as we talked about our deer, has limited effects on our deer population.
Limited effects on deer.
So there's a number, with that said, they kill deer. I'm not saying they don't kill deer. So there's a number of reasons I would argue that a coyote's not an apex predator, and it's an omnivore to add to it. When I read about apex predators, so far everyone I've read about has been an obligate meat eater.
You have to eat meat. You can't survive on anything else.
Yeah. So and that's more specialized, but specialized towards meat is what I want to say.
Okay. And Chris, you shook your head when you mentioned reintroducing wolves to address coyotes.
So, you know, historically, there may have been two different kinds of wolves here, gray wolves and a red wolf type. We extirpated the gray wolf, not knowing any better about wolves, by the way. And the red wolf, then we think migrated north into Ontario and Quebec. And now that source population of eastern wolves, which is what they're now called, is located up in Algonquin Park. And there are only about 250 of them left. If a reintroduction of wolves were to ever occur, the only appropriate wolf to bring back would be the eastern wolf. And the thing that makes this so interesting is it is the eastern wolf with which the western coyote originally mated. And the eastern wolf in size ranges from about 65 to 80 pounds. So eastern wolves show their very good taste in mating partners by frequently choosing coyotes. And up around Algonquin Park, where coyotes are sitting on the outside of the park, there is frequent hybridization that's going on up there. So the entire northeastern part of the United States should be considered a hybridization swarm, which sounds alarming, but all the wild dogs in the woods, gray wolves, eastern wolves, Great Lakes gray wolves, eastern coyotes, are interbreeding now to create the kind of predator that the ecosystem seems to be pushing for. So reintroducing wolves would make no difference in the coyote population. Not only would they not kill the coyotes, they would mate with them and produce a more adaptable coyote-like wolf.
That's fascinating.
Thank you.
Yeah, we could do a whole show just on the whole
wolf reintroduction.
But Mark, I wanted to ask you something that Rick explained earlier. He feels that there should be some limits on the hunt while pups are being reared, saying that if you kill adults at this time, the pups will actually learn bad behavior, the non-alpha males will come in and breed, so you actually get more coyotes if you have more killing of coyotes and more badly behaved coyotes. And so I just wonder what you think about that.
Yeah, I think that is, with all due respect to my good friend Rick, conjecture. We're not sure that that's the case, and I would indicate that in the case of the controversy regarding the hunting of animals during the pupping season, the impact is on both the adults and the pups. You know, the concern is there's collateral impacts on the pups themselves. They're not viable in the absence of those adults if it happens at that critical time. So I think it's somewhat academic. In any case, it's a theory I've heard a number of times. It may or may not be a legitimate one, but I view it as speculation rather than fact. And if I could, Laura, I'd like to quickly mention in response to the excellent call, coyote mortality on deer is not selective. It is not creating a better deer. In fact, a fair amount of the mortality imposed by coyotes is on very healthy deer. And of course, coyote mortality on fawns is non-selective. It's simply the fact that it is a fawn. So
Sure, and that's how predators work. They often pick the youngest and weakest.
Well, the youngest, but it's not selective in terms of selecting either an unhealthy or a healthy fawn. So my point is, I don't believe coyote mortality on deer is beneficial to the herd.
Okay, and I can see everybody wants to jump in real quick because we got lots of calls and emails. So go ahead, Pat.
To talk a little bit, I got a few things I want to talk about. about wolf reintroduction. In the late 90s, there was a scientific document that mapped wolf habitat throughout northern New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and into Maine, and found that the habitat was available to support wolves. We certainly have the prey base to support wolves. Wolves would change the ecology of coyotes. Coyotes would continue to exist, no doubt. But there's a state law that was put in place that said no state agency nor person shall reintroduce wolves, which I'm coming back to the concerns about the public and lawmakers at that time. So that's, as you said, could be a whole show on itself. About pup survival, and I was reading some literature in an unexploited population of eastern coyotes, there was a 30 to 60% pup mortality. That means it was unexploited population. It wasn't hunted or anything like that.
Just
so
naturally.
There's natural mortality, too, to pups, regardless of whether a population's exploited or not.
So. Okay, so Rick and then Chris, go ahead.
Two things. One, apex predators, I agree with Pat in general, though I look at it more at like a mountain range where you've got maybe the tallest mountain that infects all of the other mountains beneath it. But in its own domain, I think coyotes do act as an apex predator for the prey base that it's optimizing or that it's taking advantage
of.
So
almost an apex predator.
Almost.
They don't go after moose, but they go after everything else.
But it's not such a simple thing as saying it's a triangular situation with a top dog and that's the end of it. It may be in certain instances like Isle Royale with wolves, but it's not that in New Hampshire, and I don't think it ever will be, even if wolves did manage to make it back here on an occasional basis. So that's one. And the second, I think there's really good evidence to show and scientific evidence to show that different wild canid populations around the world do respond to hunting pressure by trying to populate their packs even more widely. And that's, I mean, there's a jackal study that just came out this past year that really demonstrated over 3-year time looking at how jackals respond to hunting pressure by actually increasing their population. So I think I would, again, respectfully disagree with Mark on that.
I'd love to see some more study on that because it's a very interesting concept and one that's a little hard to wrap your head around for sure. Go ahead, Chris.
I will give my time. Rick made the point. So.
Okay. And I want to remind everyone, you're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Go ahead, Mark, jump back in.
Yeah. This whole issue of whether or not you result in more rather than fewer as a result of human-induced mortality is a very complex one. I would simply say that my assessment is that what's actually happening is you have younger animals that are released to breed if you reduce densities, but it's transitory animals that already exist on the landscape that are filling that void. It's not that you can surpass the limitations on a population. They're really determined by food.
Food availability, which makes complete sense, too. Yeah. Okay, so let's take another call. This is John in Colebrook. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you for taking the time to air this topic.
Sure.
It is fascinating. I think it's a New Hampshire disgrace and a shame on the state, the way we treat our coyotes. And that, this is coming from a lifelong hunter. And like Chris, I had a big sheep operation here at one time. I had a lot of land under fence, good, hot, clean, tight fence. Had two pasture guard dogs. We never had any problems whatsoever with coyotes. And in fact, I begged hunting friends not to shoot any coyotes around here because I had them educated. I would have had to teach a whole new bunch. But, this thing about too many coyotes is such a subjective thing, as I think Rick Vanderpool said. What is too many? What does that mean? Too many to whom? And for whom? That kind of bothers me. But, we've been persecuting, this is the thing, we've been persecuting coyotes for centuries, and yet they're still in every city and town. And New Hampshire, in New Hampshire, we shoot coyotes like rats at the dump. And if you can believe it, Laura, and this is hard to believe, our, and I put that in quotes, our, because it's mine and yours, everybody's really, our fishing game, even, if you can believe this, allows coyote killing contests.
I have heard of those, and I wonder if you can tell us about those, Mark. Allow coyote killing contests? I mean, I've heard that these happen, that they're sponsored by, you know, private hunting clubs or whatever. But what does that mean, allow coyote killing contests?
The implication is that somehow we support this activity. In fact, from my perspective, what's happening is hunters who are involved in coyote hunting or in deer hunting and or in turkey hunting have the legal right of association post-hunting to compare notes regarding what they've done and how they've done it. You know, we don't see ourselves as endorsing in any way that activity, nor do we see ourselves as having authority in terms of how people choose to affiliate with one another after being involved in a legal activity. Are we advocates for coyote hunting contests? No, we're not. Can people compare afterwards? Yes, they can.
Okay, so Chris, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think that that whitewashes the situation. Sporting groups, these things are sponsored. There are prizes that are awarded. You know, in its basest form, it's a form of gambling where coyotes can be taken in any means possible. And so dogs can go out and surround the coyote and kill it. You want to see something awful. You want to see three or four dogs killing a coyote that's been trapped or is, you know, unable to defend itself in some way. Awful. And, you know, at the end of the contest, the people are awarded prizes for the largest or the smallest or the lightest or the darkest. We have numerous pictures of the aftermath of these contests, and these animals are then wasted. It is a waste to kill these animals and throw them in the woods.
But those aren't sponsored by Fish and Game,
not
Chris.
Sponsored by Fish and Game. They're not. They're sponsored by private hunting clubs or, you know, like a Coyote Creek over in Rochester has. There are several places around that have them. So Fish and Game does not sponsor them. They don't actively condone them. But I would like to see them stop them because it sends a message to the public that coyotes don't have an intrinsic value other than as an object to kill.
How is that different from a fishing contest? Do you see contests like, look, Johnny caught the biggest fish?
You know, it's essentially no different, but in many fishing contests, those fish can be thrown back in the water.
All right. I can see everyone wants to jump in. We've got to take a quick station break. We will pick this up after that short break. And we'll start reading some of your emails because a lot of them have come in and I'd love to go to some of these comments as well. John, thank you so much for that call. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR.
Civics 101 has done hundreds of shows about how the government works.
But we realized that we missed a step, something bigger.
All right, step right up, gentlemen. Don't miss your chance to commit treason.
Our nation, our government, is all built on paper and ink.
That's why we made a 6-part series on the founding documents, the pieces of paper that make us us, or rather, we. Subscribe or listen online at civics101podcast.org. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, coyotes in New Hampshire. We're living side by side with them, given that they're present in all areas of the Granite State. This hour, we've been finding out what makes coyotes a resilient, adaptive species, also their role in the ecosystem and the conflicts that come up. with humans. Join us with your questions and personal experiences. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Mark Ellingwood, Patrick Tate, Chris Shadler, Rick Vandepol, let's go right back to our listeners. And Mike in Grafton says, I have lived on the edge of a large state forest for 38 years, and during that time have raised chickens, geese, ducks, rabbits, and goats, and have had many dogs. I have never lost any livestock or dogs to coyotes, even though they are living close proximity with us. We always took care to have our domestic animals secured every night and went out to close up the coops and the barns. If you live in an area with predators, you have to be realistic and responsible, Mike says. He also says, are there valid instances where domestic animals and livestock are taken by coyotes or other wild animals? It seems a whole industry has evolved around vilifying coyotes and selling goods to hunt them. This bill is based in fact. It stops a cruel practice and still allows hunting. I support HB 442, Mike says, during the non-breeding season. It makes sense. Mike, thank you so much for the email. To his question, I'll throw this to you, Rick. Are there valid instances where domestic animals and livestock are taken by coyotes and other wild animals? I did just a quick search. I do this every morning. I just do a quick headline check before I go on the air. And most of the headlines that came about coyotes were coyote in Massachusetts snatches small dog. So are there instances where this happens?
Absolutely. I recall finding some golden retriever fur in Coyote Scat one time. That said, it's pretty rare, right? So this is not a common occurrence. You usually hear about it. And yet it gets at the issue of how we treat our own domestic animals. And like Mike said, which is a great point, that if we do it right and we protect them from potential predation, don't advertise that fact, we can coexist. And that gets at the point of this whole issue of respecting the wildlife we have and learning to coexist with them and not doing things that would put our domestic animals in otherwise a harmful fashion.
Have you heard these complaints, Mark, that coyotes are a threat to, you know, cats and dogs?
We get the calls, and yes, on occasion, pets are being killed by coyotes. And in some circumstances, legitimate farming activities are impacted by coyotes. But as Rick said, it's very uncommon. It's manageable. And I think a better informed public would be able to better deal with those issues.
Pat, go ahead.
One thing I want to add is with managing those issues, there isn't one mechanism that works 100% perfect. So there was mentioning of guard dogs earlier. There's examples where depending on scale, other wildlife are prevented from using the area because they're afraid of guard dogs. There's been examples where guard dogs have gone rogue, and I'm pointing those out that there's a low percentage chance of negative consequences from those animals as well. Here in New Hampshire, time investment. Agriculture, from my experience talking with farmers, it's very tight bottom lines, and the needed structures to keep animals safe and things like that. Some of when I've talked to people have expressed aggravation and saying to me, I don't have the funds to do that.
So it's a lot to manage it.
There's a lot of pros and cons.
To manage your livestock protection. It isn't just, it's not easy or cheap. That's what you seem to be saying.
Right.
Oh, Chris, you described earlier you managed to do it. Was it expensive?
No, it's not. You know, go to the SPCA and pick up a donkey and put the donkey in with your flock or your herd. They are amazing coyote deterrent factors.
Coyotes don't go after donkeys?
No. Oh, no.
Oh.
No. No.
Go ahead, Mark, and then I'm going to read a couple more emails.
Yeah, actually, relative to donkeys, they are pretty aggressive, protective of herds, and are known to actually pursue coyotes. So that's the focus. It's not unlike the llama with the sheep. It's the same deal. Right. Or guard dogs, for that matter.
Okay, you learn something new every day. I did not know that. BJ wrote us an email from Sullivan. BJ says, the fact that this bill was even created, this is the bill, again, that wants the hunt to be limited during pup rearing season. The fact that this bill was even created, BJ says, is because last year the Fish and Game Commission did not follow the advice of fish and game biologists who recommended a pause during pup rearing in the year-round hunting of coyotes. Did you know, BJ says, that fewer than 3.6% of New Hampshire residents have hunting licenses, yet by law 100% of Fish and Game Commissioners are hunters. That is so unfair to those of us who believe wildlife has a right to life and liberty, and that humans have and are still ruining ecosystems that nature knows how best to regulate. BJ says this needs to be changed. We are no longer a hunting and trapping society, not by a long shot. Why should the hunters make all the rules? Support HB 442. This gets at a lot of stuff, okay? And I want to hear from everybody on this. First of all, just a point of clarification, Mark. I think BJ isn't quite correct. Fish and Game commissioners have to have hunting or fishing licenses, not both?
That's correct. They don't need to be specific to hunting. Correct.
Okay. And Pat, did Fish and Game biologists recommend a pause during pup rearing last year or the year before?
I'll answer it and then Mark can follow up.
Sure.
I will say the Wildlife Division recommend, or brought forward a season restriction at the commission meeting. The term biologist often throws every wildlife biologist in that group, so I would leave it at the Wildlife Division. That does not mean every wildlife biologist supported the notions, and biologists may have brought forward the various concerns of other members of the public and not those that were for restricting the season.
So go ahead, Mark, and then I want to hear from you, yeah. Chris.
Quickly,
and Rick,
I'd like to mention with regards to the proposal that's on the floor over at the legislature.
This is HB 442.
Yes. I have significant concerns about it to the extent it's a 5-month closure and it's enshrined in statute rather than rule. We would much prefer to retain the authority to be able to manipulate coyote seasons across the boards. We think it's in the best interest of the resources, not only coyotes, but other species, for that authority to be retained by the department.
Because that's how it's been done in the past, right, Mark?
It's
the Fish and Game Commission that sets hunting seasons and rules and regulations, not the legislature.
Yes, they have. They are required to consent with the rule packages that we put together. And so there's a partnership there where we work together. And I have to say, in 95% of the circumstances, we find parity, we find balance. In this particular case, there was a difference of opinion driven by values, but also driven by a lack of hard data. And as a consequence, they passed. But putting into statute that kind of rule to us is very concerning.
What's the concern?
Well, statute for us is more or less concrete. It's very difficult to manipulate statutes. That authority really belongs within the flexible purview of the department. We have a long track record of having been very successful in managing to the benefit of all the wildlife species we have. There was a time in the past where those seasons were set through legislature. Problems there is what led to the passage of that authority to the department. We'd like to retain it. That's an important issue for us.
Go ahead, Rick.
Well, I think it's an important point that Mark just made about the fact that the legislature used to set the seasons, and there were problems with that. They weren't necessarily trained. They weren't biologists, but that was, in fact, the case in 1978. After that time, the commission has been doing that through rule and, of course, as Mark said, through a review process through the Rules Committee. That said, there have been at least 3 times in the last few years where the commission did not listen to or respect the proposals put forth by the Wildlife Division, as the case may be, and therefore it had been a sort of a frustration on the parts of those of us that don't necessarily feel like we have a voice on the commission, because they are hunters and trappers, which are, as we know, only about 12% of the population of the state. So,
but as you know, Rick, they're the ones that also kick in the most amount of money. So if outside interests, or not outside interests, but other interests like kayakers, bird watchers, hikers, if they want more say on the Fish and Game commission, this is an argument that's been going on for a long time. The hunters and anglers say, hey, look, we're the ones footing the bill, so we should have a bigger say.
Well, if that was true, I would agree, but that's not true. I mean, they are footing part of the bill. You look at Fish and Game budgets, which the study commission looked at this past year, and you realize that, in fact, there's a lot of money from other sources, and there is a lot of willing money and donations coming from the non-hunting public to help manage wildlife in the state.
You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Chris, did you want to jump in on this? This is a long-standing issue.
It is. Just very briefly, you know, the thing that is happening right now is that because Fish and Game is in dire straits financially, and we all recognize it, and we all feel it's really important to support Fish and Game financially, and the study commission was going to find ways of doing that, Fish and Game is now dipping into the general fund, which means the taxpayers of New Hampshire, in order to help make ends meet. So, like it or not, the people in New Hampshire are supporting Fish and Game from the general fund. And this is a fairly new thing that Fish and Game has had to go to that. So, you know, there's a myth that says that hunters and trappers support Fish and Game, when in fact, given the federal monies and the dollars that from all taxpayers that go into those federal monies that are then siphoned down into Fish and Game, no, hunters and trappers support it to a certain extent, and most of it comes from other sources.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I would just say I politely disagree with Chris. Sportsmen and women in the state do a significant amount of carrying the weight on behalf of the broad public. The notion that we're dipping into state funds, in fact, is, I think, the state recognizing the importance of what we do as an agency and deciding to help to sustain us in a way that allows us to continue that long, proud tradition. Mm-hmm. We're not taking advantage of the state. The state is, in fact, helping us to be the best we can on behalf of all the public within the state.
So, hard to believe we have about a minute and a half left. I did want to give everybody one last chance to weigh in. And maybe I'll start with you, Rick, but go down the line. What do you think is going to happen with this whole issue around coyotes and how they're managed?
That's a cloudy crystal ball for me at the time. Mm. But I just hope that the outcome of elevating this in the public eye engenders the respect that these animals have, just like every other animal that we are a part of and are living in an ecosystem with.
And Chris, what's one myth that you'd like to dispel about coyotes to our listeners today?
Well, I guess there's something that I would want to respond to that I think is really important, and that is that coyotes are, like other predators, very effective at sussing out weakened animals. And with chronic wasting disease on our doorstep and other things.
That's a deer disease, right?
It is a deer disease. Yeah. Coyotes may be able to pick out those deers that are sickened. I think
that would infect the whole population.
Yes, and which makes this a very important predator for the deer population.
Okay, last chance. Pat, go ahead.
If I could add to that, coyotes help pick out the sick, but there's research out there that says that coyotes can help spread CWD in their scat. So there's a con to
chronic wasting
positive
disease.
Yeah. So there's, again, as saying this whole thing, there's pros and cons to everything. This whole debate shows how much indifference there is about populations. But because there's a large debate, and going back to the commission, it shows that everyone cares and it wants to get their word heard.
Mark, I apologize. I got to have to ask you to make it super short.
Yeah, I will. Just rest assured, everybody out there, that we have a keen interest in doing the right thing by all the wildlife species of the state for the broad public.
All right. I really appreciate everybody coming in. This has been great. I learned a lot. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.